Blog Talk Radio.
Your partners in crime, the flag of caution, the Tasmanian devil, and of course, the ever-loving mama bear, Miss Lee Reed. How in the heck are all of y'all doing? Glad to have you on board. Man, oh man. I mean, we called RFK to the top last week. RFK for president this week. My goodness gracious. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Back to back. Man, what a heck of a race in Michigan. Not to spoil it. I mean, you know, honestly, it's almost like every racetrack that has been crappy for the last 10 years now seems like the most exciting tracks to go to. We talk about Atlanta. We talk about Michigan. We're talking about the mile and a half. All the good racetracks that, well, in our minds are good, those are the ones struggling to give us a decent show. I would take that outside of New Hampshire. I really enjoyed the New Hampshire show. But I can't wait to get my colleagues involved and see what they think of the who's is who's and who's ain't. And we also have a special guest coming on tonight, former NASCAR Cup Series driver and former ARCA Championship winner, 2017 ARCA Championship winner, Austin Theriault. Did I say that right? Theriault?
Theriault.
Okay. I am probably the worst announcer of names in the world. There is no doubt in my mind that I did not do well in English, and I know I live next to Louisiana, but if it's Boudreaux or Brodrew, or I fail at it, and that's been one of my hardest things to accept in my racing career, in my announcing careers. It doesn't matter if I think I have it right or not. It's guaranteed to come out of my mouth wrong. So I don't know. Maybe I'll get it. I mean, I feel kind of like Dale Earnhardt Jr. kind of suffers the same thing with Toyota. So definitely.
Christopher Buescher.
Christopher Buescher. How about Christopher Buescher? Holy hell. When I told you the CB was the hottest driver in NASCAR, I was talking about Christopher Bell. I was not talking about Chris Buescher. But I just want you guys to see the catapult that he has done in the sports, in the championship standings, being, you know, first of all, the winners, Francesco. Jeez, where is my mind at? Ricky Stenhouse is the only guy that's kind of out of character, right? He's the only winner this year that's a surprise winner. We'll leave it at that. I mean, maybe Chris Buescher's a surprise winner, but technically when you look at – he won last year, okay? So you look at the list this year, Ricky Stenhouse is the only one that kind of stands alone. Well, Chris Buescher and Brad Keselowski, even with Chris winning, he was probably, what, 10th? Maybe 8th in points? I think this – or does this catapult him? I think this puts him at, like, 6th or something in points, right? Just having the two wins versus one win, you're jumping all over those guys with one win, really sets you up for where how far you have to fall when we start cutting drivers out. I'm having a hard time tonight, and I hope you guys are going to work with me, keeping me on track here. I'm having some sugar issues, but we're okay. No.
I do want to mention, though, because I didn't get to watch whatever a little bit of the race happened on Sunday, but when it came to the race on Monday, of course, I was at work, so I couldn't really watch it. I mean, I probably could have if it was on Peacock. I probably could have gotten away with it, but I'm not sure how the boss would have felt about it. But I had at least the radio broadcast, which this week it was through MRN. And listening to MRN during the live race coverage on Monday, and then today I got to watch the highlights of the Cup race. Let me tell you, I felt more entertained listening to MRN covering that race versus watching NBC. And I have nothing against NBC because, I mean, I feel like NBC, in a sense, does better than Fox in a lot of aspects in terms of TV coverage. But in terms of, like, the people calling the races and giving reports back to you, shoot, MRN got NBC beat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
absolutely. Hands
oh,
down.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. Like, I was literally on my lunch break listening to the race and probably a little bit after that. And I'm sitting there, like, watching the NASCAR leaderboard on the NASCAR website and listening to MRN. And I was more entertained just by listening to the race and watching the leaderboard than watching watching NBC broadcast. Shoot! Oh, it makes me think, should I have the NBC broadcast, mute the TV, and listen to MRN instead?
Right.
I have
no, we've
done
that many times in our household. Right. The greatest thing about DVR. Yeah, no,
MRN does a great job.
If we want to create better viewership, then we need to put these guys on the television side because the whole experiment of putting a driver in to because he understands the feel of the car better, that doesn't make for better announcing, guys. Yeah, I'm so glad because, Taz, honestly, like, I think that you've fallen in that category. I think you've said many times before, well, it's okay because such and such has from the cockpit of the car. That's great, but that's where we get Jeff Burton and Dale Jarrett and Steve Letarte, and it's just a different type of commentating. It's not broadcast. It's more of commentating.
I do want to throw this in because I've taken some college courses on this and kind of been to some professional studios and things like that. When it comes to radio, you have to detail more and you
exactly.
have to report more because you're not seeing it, which is obviously understandable. In terms of TV coverage, you can see more of what's going on, which they don't report mm-hmm. as much. But
right.
at the same time, I feel like in motorsports, you need if you're watching a race, yeah, you can see what's going on. But sometimes those little itty bitty details of what's going on can also help, because when I listened to the MRN broadcast of the race, when they mentioned Bowman spun and then during that caution, when they extended it for a few laps because they thought rain was starting to come down, which ended up not really coming down, but they were mentioning how Cliff Daniels and Kyle Larson kept on playing this, if you're going to give us the extended caution, we'll take advantage of it, and we'll keep coming down pit road and keep topping off on fuel. And on NBC, you didn't really get that. Like, it was amazing because, like, at first I thought, what the hell are Larson and Cliff Daniels doing? I mean, yeah, I had Larson as a pick, but if I didn't have him as a pick, I would sit there and be like, what are they thinking? And
exactly.
when you sit there and you start getting the pit strategy involved, MRN explained, oh, they did this because, you know, it saves them on putting fuel in when they go down for a green flag stop or even a caution stop, which obviously pit stops only happen under green. And obviously it ended up paying off for Larson. And I believe Keselowski and Eric Jones are nearly on the same pit strategies too, because Buescher and Truex were 20 laps older versus guys like Larson, Jones, Brad Keselowski. I mean, Larson admitted in an interview with MRN that once the contact happened, he thinks it made the car slower, but he said other than that, it was about the same as it was before the contact when Bowman spun. But, I mean, shoot. If pit strategy became a factor, Truex almost snapped the Toyota winless streak at Michigan. Ford continued to prevail at the track. And I don't know. I personally like MRN broadcast a lot better than what I saw with NBC.
All right, so I've stayed by long enough. If CW were to go and pick any broadcasting team of your choice, would you choose the Dale Jr. Jeff Burton show, or would you choose Dave Moody and Alex Hayden and Rusty Wallace
Mike Bagley
and that group? Who would you choose?
I would definitely go with the MRN team. You know, like Taz explained, when you're on radio, you have to be much more descriptive and detailed in the things that you're saying. You know, I grew
not
up
all that.
You know, I'm old, but I grew up listening to baseball on the radio. They didn't show the games on regular television. You know,
right?
And once they started televising games, I would put the TV on, but still had the radio on because I wanted my local commentators.
Right.
You know, and wasn't it, I believe it was Mike Bagley that covered corners on the Chicago race from MRI?
Yes, yes.
You know,
it was either Hayden or Bagley.
Fantastic.
It was Bagley, yes, it was Bagley. Right.
Fantastic. So, yes. If I were CW, I'd be tagging MRN people. Absolutely.
And we say, you know, look, the broadcasting from NBC is definitely better than Fox. But when you're at the track, you don't have the television broadcasting company announcing to the fans in the stands. You have either MRN radio or PRN radio. So the whole idea that the networks bring their own announcers, that may change with CW. They may lean more on the broadcasting team that NASCAR already furnishes. NASCAR furnishes the broadcasting team. They pay MRN directly and PRN directly. MRN is connected through the France family and ISC, and PRN is connected through
SMI.
The guy over there, SMI, right. Thank you, Miss Lee.
Yeah.
So, but I'm with you guys. I, for generations, have said that I prefer the broadcasting over the radio versus the television. And like you, Ms. Lee, I'm old, and I can name you all the best broadcasters from our time. And the one thing about it is they're all from the radio time, right? So I am probably more lenient towards that style of announcing and that style of broadcasting than I ever have been the TV model. Because even Ken Squire and Ned Jarrett, they had their time on the radio, right? Because there was a time where TV broadcasting was actually extra. Like, their original broadcasting was for radio, not actually on television. So, you know, as we've gotten further away from that, I think that Mike Joy has done a great job. Of course, Mike Joy's been around since the early 80s. And his seat is soon to be gone. Rick Allen is the worst play-by-play announcer in the world. There's just, I mean, the guy just, like, I cringe at some of the things he says sometimes, especially when he's, you know, it's like the PA announcement about Noah Gregson, right? That was just the most cringiest 3 minutes that Rick Allen felt like he had to put in there. Like, okay, you know, like everybody else kind of stayed away from it. I think that, you know, that the public deserves to know what happened. But, you know, as we're talking about broadcasters here, it just felt crazy, man. I wish that they would at least put together a better broadcasting team for the network viewers.
I do want to throw in quick before we lose us for the guests or whatever, but I have listened to PRN Radio, which I believe was the last Monday night race or Monday day race that Truex ended up winning. And PRN was pretty good, but there's something about the broadcasters between PRN and MRN. MRN broadcasters literally
MRN.
It made me glued to the race, even though I wasn't watching it.
Yeah, no, MRN, nothing against PRN, but MRN is hands down way better.
Well, let me come to PRN's defense. There's one name that stands above the rest, and that's Doug Rice. I think that Doug Rice is amazing. He does a great job. Unfortunately, the crew from PRN was a little bit older, I think, than the crew from MRN, as we've added Alex Hayden and Mike Bagley and stuff. You know, Mike's been around for a good 20 years or so now. But, PRN has had guys like Kyle Petty and other kind of, you know, semi-halfway decent broadcasters, I guess, come through the fold. But Doug Rice is kind of the name for PRN, and he does the PRN weekly racing show. And Lenny Bezirsky, he's another guy that really does a lot of the PRN. PRN's heavily involved and the lower series races as well. So they have wing sprints and a lot of the lower series type of racing that they still cover and stuff through PRN. So, you know, I mean, you get what you get on either side. Both, I think, are a step above the broadcasting teams that NBC and Fox bring to the table. And it's nothing against Dale Jr. or anything else. You know, guys, I love him. I love Dale Jr. I love what he's doing with Dirty Mo Radio, but it's no surprise. MRN, PRN, you're gonna get a better broadcast from one of those. Let me check here real quick and see. Still no guests in the building. I don't know if we have a contact number or what, but I do know that we have the first topic of discussion tonight, RFK. I don't know what more to really say about RFK. I want to mention that Martin Truex Jr. was probably the fastest car at Michigan. Chris Buescher raced to win that race. He proved that he could finish a race. I think that had Buescher not had the couple of wins already under his belt, that's confidence, right? Do you guys agree how he threw the block on Truex? That was confidence. He didn't spoil his own race. Truex is the one that slipped up, and if Truex hadn't slipped up, I'm not sure Buescher would have won, because Truex probably would have eventually got Buescher to slide up a little bit or something. But the first one to make a mistake was the fastest car in the field, and that was Martin Truex Jr. Martin Truex Jr. has been on another area in another area code, guys, the last several weeks.
Oh, much agreed. I am full with you. Truex was not only the fastest car on the track, but he was basically the guy to beat. Won both stages, obviously. And you mentioned Buescher raced for the win. Truex obviously raced for the win too, but Truex was obviously the faster car. And speaking of Truex, it was announced Sunday afternoon, I think it was, Sunday evening, that Truex has signed a one-year extension, so he's not retiring.
Yeah, I mean, how could he? Like, right? I mean, did he wake up in February and think, okay, this is the year I'm going to retire, and then all of a sudden success is falling at his feet again with the win at the Coliseum and then three more wins since then? I mean, at what point in time did a bell go off and say, hey, you know, though I had a disastrous year last year, this year has been quite pleasant. You can't walk away when you're beating down the wall for another championship because, you know, look, he probably has better odds than anybody at this point in time to win the Cup Championship. I'm all a proponent, though, for winning and leaving, right? I mean, the old John Elway, Peyton Manning way, go win you a Super Bowl and retire. He's not going to be able to do that. So even if he wins the championship this year, I think if he were to win that championship this year, he would kind of give us a farewell tour next year. But I personally, walking on both sides of my mouth here, don't really feel like Truex is really the farewell type of guy. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what you guys are thoughts. I know one damn thing. He is probably at the top of the Mount Everest right now as a guy who you should watch for a championship. What are your thoughts on that, Miss Lee?
Well, we've talked before in the past about, you know, the effects that his personal life have likely had on his racing. And he's at a point in his life now where he's got a new outlook. And I think that's reflecting in his racing. So can he contend this year? Most definitely. Will he retire? I kind of doubt it. Because even if he doesn't get the championship, he's riding a high right now. So I don't see him retiring.
Guys, let's put this on hold real quick. Our guest has made his way into the building here. We don't want to give him any less time than he deserves. So let's go ahead and bring on in Austin Theriault. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Yes, sir. You hit it on the first try, which is what people don't normally do. So it's good to be with you tonight.
Well, I tell you, I don't normally either. I am probably the world's worst announcer at pronouncing last names, but we did try before you come on. So cool that we hit it. It's great to have you on board here at Race Chat Live, the RCL gang. Of course, I've got Ms. Lee Reed here and Taz Taylor, who will join us, who will join in on the conversation as well. Also, it looks like you've got some big things coming up. Also, a former Cup Series driver, former ARCA Series winner. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we dive off in the goodies real quick, Austin.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the pleasure of racing for a bunch of you know, kind of legends in the sport, if you want to call it that. And some of them are a little older, and some of them are still racing. I guess the highlight for me would have been racing for Kenny Schrader back in 2017. I had came off of sort of a difficult injury when I was racing for Brad Keselowski in the Truck Series in 2015. I ended up fracturing my back over at Las Vegas Motor Speedway and hit a place in the wall that didn't have a safer barrier. And as you can imagine, those make a big difference. So I was coming off of that injury and didn't really have a lot of opportunities because I had to give up that seat because of the injury, and it just, we lost a bunch of momentum. I had built a lot of momentum and a lot of we were, you know, consistently finishing better every week with Keselowski and the truck team and the 29 truck. That was the truck that Ryan Blaney moved up to the Xfinity Series the year before, and so it opened up the seat for me, and I shared it with, like, Brad and Joey Logano and Blaney, and some of the Cup guys were coming back and racing. So to come back in 2017 and run for a championship at ARCA with Schrader was really a dream come true for me. I remember watching Schrader when I was growing up, and I him and I have a lot in common. We're you know, I felt like Schrader was a dedicated guy. He obviously loved the sport, and I knew that he wanted to finally get a championship, and some of the guys that were working for him at the time had been super loyal to him and worked for him for many, many, many years, and, you know, they all deserved a championship, and I was fortunate and grateful that we were able to walk away from that year with 7 wins. I think we 3 consecutive wins, 7 wins total, and walked away with the last ARCA champion before NASCAR bought ARCA, if that makes sense. NASCAR buying ARCA, I know it's changed a lot and stuff, but I'm proud to be able to say I was the last ARCA-only champion, and so that's been awesome. And, you know, after that, you guys know that racing is a pretty hard sport to stay in.
Right.
And sometimes it's like you go from year to year or opportunity to opportunity, and I finally had a great opportunity that came together a couple of years after that, and obviously it wasn't necessarily with a Cup team that was running up front and had a lot of speed, but it still was an opportunity that had some consistency to it, and we were building some good relationships with sponsors and whatnot, and that kind of had another difficult break that year, and ended up getting hurt again at Talladega. I think that was October of that year, and then COVID hit, and you know, all the sky fell down for everybody that year, and a lot of people lost sponsorships and all of that. So we
interviewed the director of competition of Rickware Racing, I believe, in 2019. He was the guy that was piecing all of these. What brought our attention to Rickware was all of the sponsorships that they were creating. Like everybody was in 2019 saying, sponsorships are hard to come by. Sponsorships are hard to come by. And we're looking over here at Rickware Racing, and he's like, this guy's like unlimited. Like every week, it's a different sponsor on the car. So we actually reached out to them and brought on one of their guys. And between their paint schemes and their sponsorship opportunities, we were quite impressed with the direction at that time Rickware was going. So we're there with you in that development stage.
Yeah. So it was a good situation, a really good platform, because got to keep in mind, there's a lot of companies that they're maybe small to medium sized companies who just want to have an opportunity to market to the NASCAR audience, but they're not like Fortune 500 companies, and they don't have a $1 billion marketing budget, but they want to have an opportunity and a chance to market. So those teams are the ones that that are really a good fit for the medium sized companies, and so that was the case for me. Coming from the state of Maine, Maine's only got 1 million people in it. So Right. You know, as compared to like California, your size and number of companies is just not comparable. So with the relationships that I had and the people that believed in me as a driver, you know, at the national level, it just was a perfect fit. So grateful for my time there. But you know, I guess you could say there was other cards at play, and so I'm doing a bunch of different things now.
Wait a minute.
It doesn't have me behind the wheel.
But that's what we were going to get to next. If with your time away from the race car, is that when the political thing kind of started, or were you already in the race car when you were thinking about running for representative? How did that come about, just going from the cockpit straight into a government elected office?
So I had always been interested in politics from a young age. Always paying attention, you know, wanted to know what was going on. And, you know, I think it's important for people to know about their government and how it works. But the minute that racing, the racing became more serious, I really kind of turned the page from politics, because I was super focused on being successful as a professional athlete and making the most of that. But when COVID happened, obviously there was a lot that had happened, you know, across the country. And with when COVID was wrapping up, I guess you could say, and people were starting to move on, it just seemed like a good time to begin getting involved again. My home state is a place that I spent quite a few years growing up, and you know, I was away for a while exploring the country and seeing all kinds of stuff, all kinds of different states, and being able to travel and see what works and what doesn't work gives you a really good idea and gives you a bunch of ideas in terms of like, hey, here's what we could do in our state, in my home state. So when the opportunity came back up to run for a state legislature position, it just seemed like the right time. And I wanted to be able to give back to my small community, you know, the community that raised me and made me the person that I am. And so I jumped in with both feet, and that was 2020. Ended up winning that race with about 70% of the vote, which is, I think, a huge accomplishment. We had a lot of bipartisan support, which is hard to come by nowadays. You know, everything's so partisan, it's like you're either one or the other. But we had, you know, independents and Republicans and Democrats supporting the campaign, and now I'm a sitting legislator in the state and still involved in racing at a bunch of different levels, but not driving as much. But I do have a race coming up, so I'm excited about that.
And that's where we want to take
it. Yes.
Excuse me. Sorry, Chris. And that's where we want to turn this to, Austin, is to talk about your upcoming race, the Oxford 250, and the charity that you are supporting, the Travis Mills Foundation. Go ahead and tell us all about that.
So for folks that don't know the Oxford 250, think about the Snowball Derby, kind of a similar caliber race. Snowball Derby is obviously the biggest short track race in the country, but there are some crown jewel races that I think people look at, and I do feel like the Oxford 250 is one of them. Think of like Bubba Pollard coming up to run and win the Oxford 250, and he came up again and it didn't end up winning, but just goes to show you that this is something that some of the biggest short track racers across the country look at. And since it's my home state, I'm kind of biased to running that race. And I looked at the schedule and I said, you know, I just want to do one race this year. And we put a great, really, really good partnership together with Bar Harbor Bank and Trust, you know, a local bank here who's really heavily invested in the New England community and Maine especially. And we said, how can we give back? We want to be able to give back. If I'm going to come out of quote retirement, I want to be able to do something good. And so we put a program together. Bar Harbor Bank and Trust is kind of the anchor partner for it. But we're going to raise a bunch of money for the Travis Mills Foundation. And the Travis Mills Foundation is a foundation that's headquartered in Maine. The leader of it and the founder of it is Travis Mills himself. He's a quadruple amputee from the Afghanistan war, lost all four limbs in a explosion there, and has moved on from that to live a really exciting life, an inspirational life that a lot of us can look at and say, and just be grateful that he gave his life in service, but he's still around to be an inspiration for all of us. And so we want to raise a bunch of money for him. I've already got like an anonymous donor that's committed to donating up to $50,000, assuming that I, you know,
wow,
complete all the laps and finish in the top five. So that's really exciting. And so that puts pressure on me to do that. But we're also going to the public and saying, hey, we want the regular people involved in this too. And so we're getting donations from businesses. We're getting donations from, you know, from just regular people on the street who want to honor Travis and be a part of the foundation. And I have a website for that. At some point I'll be sure to mention it, but I'm really excited about that because I only want to come out of retirement if it's for a good cause.
That's great. And can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly the foundation does?
Absolutely. Because Travis had been through so many injuries, he understood that for a soldier who's been wounded in battle or wounded in wars post 9/11, so you know Iraq, Afghanistan, you know a couple other conflicts, it can sometimes feel like you're kind of alone when you're trying to recover, and especially hard for families. So the foundation itself supports getting these soldiers and their families back on their feet, whether it's financially, you know, spiritually, emotionally, physically, across the board. They're just there to assist with recalibrating, is what they call it, recalibrating the veterans to get them in a place where they feel like their life has value and their life has dignity, and to support the families through that process. A lot of the families come to Maine. They have a retreat center up here in Maine, and the families come here, stay for an extended period of time, and the veterans come up as well. And what Travis has been able to do is really give life back to a lot of these soldiers who have been wounded in a variety of different ways, not just physically, like I said, mentally. You know, there's emotional wounds that people don't want to talk about. Veteran suicide, all of that stuff's really important, and Travis and his foundation has been a leader in that space across the country, not just in Maine. Like they've got people who have been a part of this program across the country, and so all the money that gets donated to this is going to keep this program going, so that families that are in tough spots and soldiers who have been affected by, you know, battle scars that you can see and some that you can't see, can still come and have a home and get their life back on track.
That's absolutely fantastic. Our founder of the 110 Nation, which is our parent company, is a retired Marine. So we as a company are definitely 100% supportive of our men and women in service. So this is really great timing to be able to help promote this race. Tell us a little bit more about the track and the race itself.
The track is a third mile, really flat track located in kind of southern Maine. For those that don't really know where Oxford Plains is, it's about an hour north of Portland, about 2 hours north of Boston, maybe 3 hours north of Boston. And it's actually a track that had hosted NASCAR races back in the day, believe it or not. NASCAR,
oh, wow.
I think Richard Petty and those guys came up and raced back, maybe like Winston North, or I can't remember the name of the series, but, you know, we're talking many years ago.
Is it like the Grand National Series?
Yes.
Okay, I know what you're talking about because my home track, I'm from New York, by the way, used to have, well, you might know it, being a Northeast guy, the Fonda 200 that used to be a NASCAR race where I think one or two of the Allisons and Petty have won it multiple times, but keep going.
Yeah, so it's coming up on the 27th of August, and you know, one of the kind of exciting but challenging things about that race is you've got like 30 to 40 really strong late model teams in Maine. Maine's got a fairly decent as far as like just decent amount of strong late model teams that run, and going and showing up just to an average late model race is difficult. It's difficult to win. So you add the fact that this is the Oxford 250, which is a race that a bunch of people from across the country come up to and want to win. You've got 60 or 70 cars trying to qualify for, you know, a field half the size of that. So a bunch of good people are going to go home. And the other unique thing about the race is they don't have time trials. They have heat races. And how do they figure out where you're going to start in the heat race? You draw out of a hat. You draw pills out of a hat. So, you know, if you draw pill one, you're going to start pole of the first heat. If you draw pill 10, you might start, you know, pole of the second heat, or you could maybe start last in the first heat, depending on how many cars they have in the heats, right? So there's just so much uncertainty around qualifying, and so many people stress about getting into the race because you just never know. It comes down to where you draw, how many good cars are in your heat race, and it's not necessarily the fastest cars that get in the show. It's sometimes the cars that were either in the easiest heat or if you stayed out of trouble, or you know, maybe you got collected in a wreck or something in one of the heats, all of a sudden you're racing the Concy, starting in the back of the Concy, you've got a tough hill to climb to come back. So it's a very challenging weekend to make the race. To obviously win the race is tough. There's lap money to be won, so the winner could walk away with $50,000 if they lead all the laps, $25,000 to win. So it's a good money race. It's a exciting race. The fans are great. They pack the stands, pack the pits, and then, you know, the cherry on the top for us is just the Travis Mills Foundation, and you know, we're gonna have a bunch of people from Bar Harbor Bank and Trust there because they're funding part of the deal to be able for us to raise money for Travis and his foundation. So I'm excited to just get back on the racetrack and getting a late model for first time in about 3 or 4 years.
Do you have an entry list yet? Are there any other big names in the late model world coming up for this race besides yourself?
That's a good question. I would check the Pro All-Star Series is the series that's putting it on, and they have an entry list which is public. And I'd be curious, you know, to know myself. I don't think there's any Cup drivers that are coming up. I know in years past, like 10 years ago, they used to have, like, Kyle Busch came up and won the race. Keselowski's been up there before. You know, I think Harvick won the race, came up. I don't remember what year, but he's won that race. So it's been a big enough event to where those guys sometimes come up. But regardless of who's there or if there's anybody that's a big nationally known driver, I can promise you that the winner – it's probably going to be somebody who's seen Oxford and ran laps there before, because that track is so unique that the home track people definitely have the advantage.
All right, very good. And just curious, how did your relationship with the Travis Mills Foundation start?
The first time that I actually ran and promoted Travis's foundation was 2019 when I was doing the Cup races for Rick Ware. We had done some promotion and felt that we wanted to do the same thing that we're doing now. We wanted to showcase Travis and the work of his foundation. So, you know, my personal relationship with him goes back several years. And since his since the retreat center is actually located in Maine and Travis and his family live up here, you know, it's a small world and we've stayed in touch. So it was a no-brainer for me, knowing that I was going to come back and race, that we wanted to hitch the horses back up and make another stab at raising some money for him.
That's great. And I have to tell you, Rick Ware used to be a regular guest back in the day when the 110 Nation was first starting out, and he's a great guy.
Yeah,
he is,
so
and you know, he's got...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, he's got himself involved in all kinds of different racing series now.
Yeah, and I often wonder if he doesn't have himself spread a little too thin, but as a person, I can vouch that he's just a really great guy.
There is another connection.
So,
he said Ken Schrader, and of course, Ken Schrader was connected to kind of the creator of this show, Steve Billmeyer. Kind of a walk down memory lane where we're kind of familiar with the Kenny Schrader show and his longtime friends. And Steve Billmeyer was the creator of Racing with Big Sweat that became Race Chat Live after Steve passed away. But we do have a little bit of connection in with Kenny as well. To bring things back to perspective real quick, Austin, it's definitely an interesting career. You've driven for Junior Motorsports. You've driven for Brad Keselowski. You were touted as a pretty, impressive driver. If you had to go back again, did you make all the right moves and it just didn't work out? The injury, is that really what held the racing career back? I kind of feel like that may have been the beginning of where things kind of became unraveled.
Yeah, it's tough to look back and. I guess it's tough to look back, but maybe easy to look back and say you didn't always make the right moves. But that's the nature of anything, any business. If you're involved in starting any business or a professional athlete, professional person that's trying to make the right moves. And I guess you could say that injuries were partially responsible or fully responsible for making it more challenging, but yet, you know, you can come back and also say that set the groundwork for me meeting Kenny Schrader and going and having basically a record-breaking season in ARCA for him with those seven wins, and then, you know, the best average finish I think in at least the last 50 years in ARCA, as well as the only driver that's won at all different configurations of tracks in one year. There's just a lot of great memories and great things that happened. I think when you look at how it went down, you know, back in my final year, it would have been nice to sort of leave on your own terms, if that makes sense. You know, without that final injury, I would have been able to finish out the season and potentially come back for more. But then you got to think about what I'm doing now and some of the honorable work that I've been trusted to do for my constituents back here in Maine. That probably wouldn't have happened either. So. It's all balance and all a give and take. So putting it in perspective, I would say it's all worked out fine. And I'm confident that however it's supposed to work out is the way it's going to work out.
Well, what brings me to the follow-up question is the success of Josh Berry. I have felt for many years we've given up on young talent way too fast. Josh Berry is the perfect example of a driver that was given an opportunity in the beginning. Things just did not work out. But here's the resurgence again 10 years later and what Barry's been able to accomplish. Do you feel like you might still have a little bit of Josh Berry left in you?
Here's what I'll say about Josh Berry. I think he's I think he's opened up people's eyes, like you said, that our sport has trended to, in a direction that's moving up these drivers way too quickly, and moving
Amen.
Them up in a place where they're not ready for the pressure. They're not ready for it's not that they're not ready for the pressure. They're not ready for the opportunity. And they're not always grateful for the opportunity. And I think that sets a really troubling sort of precedent for the sport, especially that everybody realizes that the old days were the golden days, when you had the guys that were cutting their teeth at short tracks, and they didn't make their cup starts till they're 30, 35. They had built a fan base locally and regionally. And so when they came on the scene, they already had a fan base, and people were like, "Yeah, I'm rooting for that guy because he's from my state, or he's a guy that I remember watching when I was growing up." And now all of a sudden you have drivers making their cup starts, and they barely run a year of whatever. They maybe didn't even run a year of late models, or they didn't run a year of trucks. They just bounce around. And I'm not blaming those drivers. That's just the nature of where the sport's at. And sometimes I actually advise drivers to, like, skip around and don't waste too much time at the short track level because there's so much pressure on them to move up. But I think that's where NASCAR is going to have to step in and start to reshape the sport and start building a foundation that's a little bit more solid. Let's build some names in trucks. Let's build some names in ARCA. Let's build some names at the short track level, so that these drivers can start getting a fan base before they get the cup, because it's the grassroots that made NASCAR where it is today. And if we tear up the grassroots just for the sake of making money at the high levels, what we're going to be left with is a sport that's not based off of talent. It's based off of money, and that's not what we want. It's certainly not. I don't think it's too far gone, is where I'm trying to get at. I think there's a bunch of different ideas on what we could do to change that, but maybe it's a balance of a lot of things. But I certainly think it's a minimum age, or at least a minimum resume or something, to where, like, you know what, if you're going to do cup, you have to at least run a year of ARCA or a year of trucks or something, because it's just otherwise it's a house of cards, and that's not good.
Austin,
What does it take to make sure that you are prepared for the Oxford 250, being that you've been outside of the race car a little bit? How do you prepare for that race, knowing that there's so much surrounding that specific event?
Well, we're going to test. We're going to go and do a test day and try a bunch of different things on the car. You know, luckily I've got a bunch of laps there. I probably have, you know, thousands of laps maybe at that track. So, I'm pretty confident that I'm going to be able to get up to speed and not have an issue there. But as far as how to prepare, I guess we just got to make sure that the wheels are tight, the shocks are on tight. We don't have anything crazy mechanical that goes wrong. But
no sim
it comes
time.
Down to, yeah, no sim time. To be honest, I don't even know if I'm going to do any iRacing because my iRacing stuff's broke. So I think I'm just going to jump in and just let it go, but hope the draw works out fine. And that's where I'm really hopeful, because the draw can either make or break your whole weekend.
Right. And that's interesting, because the one thing that I'm completely against is boring the fan with qualifying. And I think that that's part of the problem that we could get into a million times in discussion. But fans want to see racing, and they like to see the fast guy start from the back, or they like to see their guy put into opportunities to watch him perform. So many times these days we go to a racetrack, we have qualify and then heat races, and you're like, well, wait a minute, what are we having heat races for if we had qualify? And so it's always the fastest guy, always, all the way down the line to the feature. I like the idea of the appeal draw. I like the idea that maybe you have to work a little bit harder. You have to stand up on the wheel. I feel like that brings a better show. Late model racing is definitely on the rise, I feel, especially with Flow Racing and these other outlets, to be able to finally watch these types of venues. Have you found any interest in watching these late model venues as they've become more popular with your spare time?
The interesting thing that I think is going on in the late model world is some of the NASCAR guys are paying attention, and Harvick and those guys buying the Cars Tour, for an example, is a good sign. And that goes back to what we were just talking about, the fact that you've got people rushing through late model racing just to get to Cup. And I believe Kevin and those guys are realizing that we've got to invest at the short track level if we're going to keep the sport strong. And you see money coming in, you see, you know, advertisers coming in, you see broadcast coming in. And so, yeah, I do follow it more now. And I think it's great that some of the people who benefited from the money that came into NASCAR are reinvesting at the grassroots level of the sport. And I think it's a tragedy that, and I'm not naming names because it probably we're all guilty of it, but I think it's a tragedy that the people that made the most money from the break, their break in NASCAR, have invested the least amount in the grassroots level of the sport, because that's what made them the drivers that they are. And the very least that all of us could do is invest at the grassroots level, whether it's dirt or asphalt or late models or whatever. Let's put money and resources and attention back at the short tracks, because if we don't do that, the short tracks are going to be gone, and we're just going to have a bunch of paid drivers, meaning just a bunch of drivers that are writing a big check, running Cup, and that's going to be very bad for the sport. So we've got to strike a balance. And my comparison is, I grew up next to a potato field, and I picked potatoes when I was a kid by hand. And we used to, you know, but the long story short is the farmer knew that some years he couldn't plant, because if you take too many nutrients out of the soil, it's not going to be good down the road. And so if we continue to just take money from the top levels of the sport and don't spread it down at the lower levels and invest in the grassroots levels, then how do we expect things to keep growing? And so we've got to keep that in perspective. We've got to treat this like a long-term investment, and so hopefully NASCAR and the drivers and the people who have made it good and have benefited from the fans investing their hard-earned money to come watch a NASCAR race are rewarded, because we're investing in their local communities at their local short tracks and helping make names and heroes for the young kids that want to become NASCAR drivers or you know, professional drivers themselves.
Up until Kevin Conway, I said that there was not a driver that you would see in NASCAR that wasn't at somebody's local track at some point or period in their career. Unfortunately, I've yet to find out if Kevin Conway actually did any racing outside of the Cup Series to get where he was, but that's on another story and another note. Miss Lee.
Now, I just wanted to say, Austin, I so totally agree with you that they're moving these drivers up way too fast. I've been preaching that for years. You know, it just drives me nuts, because I personally have been heavily invested in interviewing and getting to know ARCA drivers. And they're just, even before NASCAR bought ARCA, they were moving people up way too fast, in my opinion. And so I agree with you 100% there. I think that, you know, with Harvick investing in, was it late models and things like that, there is hope there that we can start to see
drivers coming up based on talent versus who can bring the sponsors. So
I think bringing in a Harvick and that ownership group is really going to go back to what Austin was saying there, help make sure that we are getting the right drivers for these rides and not just, you know, who's got the fattest check to write. Taz Taylor, I do believe that you have a quick question for Austin before we let him go.
Yeah, Austin, you mentioned something about focus on the grassroots racing, the short track style, regardless of dirt, asphalt, whatever it may be. And, of course, you know, rushing drivers up too soon or drivers that are getting opportunities, are they grateful for it and stuff like that. Do you believe, and I'll even throw in the NASCAR weekly series deal that happens with all these local short tracks, do you believe SRX, that series there, that obviously connections with Ken Schrader and Tony Stewart, do you think they're hitting the mark of, you know, exposing more of the short track racing deals, bringing in drivers that may have had the opportunity and also getting a second chance, or maybe drivers that never found the opportunity or taken advantage of it? I'll use Haley Deegan maybe for example, or probably the best one I should really say is Ernie Francis Jr. and Doug Kobe, to throw in a local flavor there too.
That's a good question. I went to an SRX race last year with a friend. It was a dirt race, and I thought it was interesting. I thought the advantage maybe that series has is they go to some tracks where the hospitality is really cool. Like you can get right in the action if you have like a VIP ticket, or if you're you can basically buy access, and it's almost like what NASCAR used to be, if that makes sense, before it really became a little bit more commercialized. And
right.
The other advantage that I think SRX has is you've got some veterans who have following and have good names. They're attracting the fans that maybe stopped watching NASCAR whenever their favorite driver retired, and so it's probably a good way to keep these fans involved in the sport. That's one of the challenges that we have going for us in NASCAR, and I say us meaning like I feel included in that because I certainly have left the driver's seat, but I still feel a passion for seeing it be successful. Is how do you pass the baton on from a veteran to a rookie? And I don't think we found the answer to that. So in the meantime, keeping these drivers, some of these veterans on the track in a really kind of fun and exciting format, you know, the SRX races are shorter. The races are not as long, and there's just a different flow to them. I think it's a great way to keep race fans from the past involved, as well as maybe even attracting some new race fans, like you had mentioned, into motorsports, and eventually they may become NASCAR fans or they just might be casual fans. But either way, a new motorsports fan is better than none at all. So I'll take any series that's trying to think outside the box to create new motorsports fans is a success in my book.
Now, one follow-up question would be, is there any interest of you maybe running a 6 weeks or at least a one-off for that series?
That's a good question. I've never been approached about it. How about this? If I do get asked, I'll cross that bridge. But they've got to ask me first. So we'll see. I'm trying to think of what track. Maybe I could do – what do they race? Don't they race at Stafford?
Stafford,
I guess. Yep. Thunder Road, I could do Thunder Road. And you know, the funny story is so the governor of Vermont is Phil Scott. I used to race against him when I was coming up through the late model ranks. And so it was interesting. He was, I think, a state senator or a state representative at the time. So he's another race car driver turned politician, and he's been a good inspiration for me. He still races from time to time at Thunder Road, and you know, just an overall good guy. But I thought it was interesting because he had a similar backstory and leaving racing and going into politics.
And SRX will be going to Thunder Road next year, since they flooded out this year. They committed to that. So maybe we can see Austin run there.
Yeah, that would be great.
So Austin, I'll go as far as posting on Twitter and tagging every single, you know, I'll try tagging Hawk and SRX. See if we can get, squeeze it in there, Austin.
Get Tip Childers.
We'll see if it works.
Tip Childers. Yeah. So let's get real quick back to the fundraiser, back to this race, and we'll let you leave with your final thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good place to end. I was going to say let's end on a positive note and kind of just follow back up with what we're doing for Travis Mills and the foundation. I'm asking, you know, anybody that believes in the cause of helping these wounded soldiers and their families get back on their feet and recalibrated, to go to my website at austinterrio.com/Oxford250 and considering donating anything, you know, small, big, to Travis. 100% of that money is going to Travis. There's a link on that page that goes directly to Travis's fundraiser link. And so there's no middleman. There's nobody collecting money. There's no pass and go. It all goes to Travis, and really trying to raise a bunch of money for him. I'd like to raise, you know, $50,000 plus, and I think we can get there, but it's going to have to come from regular people like you and I that are giving $5, $10, $20, $50, whatever, because every little bit makes a difference. I know it costs $50,000 a week for them to run, for them to do the services that they provide. So if we can cover a week of services for those for the soldiers and their families, that's accomplishing a lot.
Right. That's amazing. I'll definitely make sure that I make my donations. I hope that you guys around the panel decide to make yours as well. Give us where we make that donation at one more time there for us also.
Yeah. If you search my name or you type in www.austinterrio.com/Oxford250, that'll bring you right to the webpage where you can click on donate and then it'll forward off to the Travis Mills Foundation donation link. So I will, if it's helpful, what I can also do is post that link on my Facebook page, right up on top, pinned on top of my Facebook page. So if you go to Austin Terrio and follow me on Facebook, you'll see me on there, Austin Terrio. I've got like 35,000 people, and if you just follow me and go click on that link, I'll post as soon as I get off the phone with you guys. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pin that link to my Facebook page,
and we will post it on our Facebook page as well.
Yep. So it's been great having you on, Austin. We want a follow-up appointment to make sure that you had a good race and all. We'd like to touch bases with you again down the road if that's cool with you. But we appreciate you coming on board here and sharing with us the opportunity that you're having, and, of course, the foundation that you're raising money for and what that foundation is for. It's very informative, and I hope that we can do our part in helping this succeed for you. Last question. So is there any significance behind the car number of your race car for this race, or is this a borrowed car from somebody else? What is the deal with the race car that you're driving?
I actually sold my late model that I had a couple years ago, and so I'm working with a gentleman out of Vermont, Derek Ming. He's got a Dale Shaw car. And so I'm going to be racing for him and sort of his family team. Grateful for you know, him opening up his seat for me to run. I sold all my equipment. I'm kind of getting out of it, getting out of the owning of cars and trailers and all that stuff. And it's a lot easier for me to just show up and drive, even though I enjoy working in the shop and I'm going to go help the guys work on the car and get it ready and stuff. You know, that way I don't have to worry about, you know, a trailer leaking in the wintertime and, you know, car sitting around and not being used. This car is a good car. It's got a track record, and hope we can get it back in victory lane. But thanks for having me on the show, and appreciate everything that you all are doing for racing. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Austin.
Thank you.
2017 ARCA Series champion, the last of the actual ARCA Series. 2018 was the beginning of the NASCAR partnership with them. So he is the last one to win. He's driven for Junior Motorsports, Rick, and now he's raising money for an upcoming race at the Oxford 250. We appreciate everything that Austin brought to the table there, and we look forward to having him back on in the future. So we'll move right back on into our segment with the where we were talking about this past weekend's race. First of all, great interview, guys. Y'all did amazing. Good job. Let's get right back into the wheelhouse. I believe we were discussing Martin Truex Jr. and his fast hot rod that he had. I think we've covered Chris Buescher. Let's get into the championship implications. I think we've kind of already started here. Chris Buescher winning back-to-back could make a big change in the way the standings are. I think we've seen this last year, though, with Kevin Harvick. He won this race and then the next race. And it really didn't have any significant meaning towards him in a championship season. We've got four races to go, three races to go. Are we going to see much change here? Obviously, Chase Elliott had a wreck. He's probably hurt himself. He's going to have to win to get in. Alex Bowman had problems as well. There's still a few guys, you know, when you say great fours, I say A.J. Allmendinger. But there is some other drivers, maybe Austin Cindric, who can race his way in. Where are we at right now in this championship standings? I'm going to start with you, Chaz.
So we know for a fact with these the final races coming up, obviously 16 drivers qualify for the playoffs, and we were at the point, obviously, in the last couple of weeks. Let me take a step back. Before Richmond, we were looking at the possibility of we could see more than 16 drivers win a race, which meant that if you've only won one race, you were not really safe. Then when Chris Buescher won at Richmond, the talks all of a sudden, you know, changed. Now all of a sudden we're guaranteed 16 different winners at least, and getting 16 drivers into the playoffs. And with Buescher repeating this week, now we're guaranteeing ourselves at least one driver will get into the playoffs based on points. Which I believe, as we speak, right now we're looking at either Kevin Harvick or Brad Keselowski getting in on points. If we were to, say, get 15 winners to end the regular season, at the moment right now we're looking at Harvick. Harvick is basically Harvick right now sits with 663 points, which according to the current playoff standings, that's good for plus 180 above the cut line. Keselowski is just under, is at 168. So he's 12 points back behind Harvick. So if you want to go further back, you have Bubba Wallace, who is a plus 58.
So, I mean, really, we're looking ideally right at Harvick or Brad Keselowski. If neither one of these two drivers get into the playoffs with a win in these next three races, one of those two are going to be getting in off points. And as for everybody else, everybody's basically in a win-you're-in scenario, but and it's not looking good for guys that we normally would see in the playoffs that are on the outside looking in. And to name a couple, the two that stick out the most is Alex Bowman and Chase Elliott.
I was just going to say, you got to mention the elephant in the room, Chase the Face. He is in a must-win situation. So what's NASCAR going to do to help that out?
Well, her hand may be tied on this one, y'all.
Call me a conspiracy theorist.
Well, he's just not running well. You can give him the biggest motor. You can give him the best chance to win, and I think that, you know, going into one of these road courses, he's going to have exactly what we just said. But if his confidence level is not, I think he's going to get his ass handed to him by some of these guys, some of these overseas drivers. There's no way that I feel Chase Elliott is the number one or number two guy on the road course rolling up into what we've known in the past has been favorable for this driver, for Chase Elliott. I mean, you know, I think in any other year, we would be like, oh, well, there's without a doubt. Now, I'm not even sure he's the best road course racer in his own organization. I think Willie B has made tremendous strides and could possibly, you know, not counting Kyle Larson, you know, who's won at road courses as well. So I think it's a little bit harder. I think that the organization itself, Kendrick, will make it as easy as possible. I did see Kyle Larson was asked kind of a question of how they were preparing themselves to race Chase Elliott, and he was very articulate on bouncing around that question and was basically like, yeah, I mean, we'll do what we can to help, you know. You know, he's got to be there in the end, and I'm just not sure Chase Elliott is there. I think that we're finally seeing a kink in the armor from this driver. And, you know, it's something that I think will help Chase Elliott later on in his career. Whether or not, you know, I've said this from day one, and I will say it right here before I pass the baton. I don't think Chase Elliott will end his career at Hendrick Motorsports. Okay, dead air. I didn't mean to surprise everybody. Dead air?
No, say that again, Chris.
I don't think Chase Elliott is going to finish his career at Hendrick Motorsports. I think that he's going to get the, you're not giving me the best equipment. It's not going to be me. It's going to be you. That's Chase. And that's why he's suffering right now. Because it's not me, it's you. You're the problem, not me. But we know that Chase is having some serious issues behind the wheel, and I think it's confidence. This kid has had everything given to him up until Kyle Larson being signed into Hendrick Motorsports. We didn't know that Jimmy Johnson was going to be better than Jeff Gordon. We didn't even know who the hell Jimmy Johnson was. He didn't take long for us to find out. But we knew Kyle Larson was a badass. You brought him into an organization that Chase Elliott felt that he was the grandmaster. He was the baton. Like, he was the guy. He was the network. And then you brought in Larson, and he's never recovered from that, y'all. And so this injury has only propelled this injury even worse.
You really think that Chase is the red-headed stepchild at Hendrick?
No, I feel like in his mind he will be, though. In his mind he will be. because it's not me, it's you. And I feel like that's the type of attitude Chase Elliott has. It's not me, it's you. I'm not the problem, you're the problem. And as long as he looks through those rose-colored glasses, he's not going to figure it out that he has to change himself to be a better race car driver. This is similar to Dale Jr. Dale Jr. had a moment of reckoning where he had to ask himself, am I as good as I think I was? Because I sucked for a long time. And I think that this is that moment. And will Chase be able to overcome? I believe so. Like, I believe he has enough talent and enough thick skin to overcome this. But it's going to be challenging for the next couple of years to see how he handles the pressure, knowing he's not the best driver in his own garage. I brought this to the table 2 years ago when Kyle Larson was winning all those races. I know, Taz Taylor, you remember that. I know you remember that, Miss Lee. Well, this is two years later, and there's been a lot of kinks in the armor. There's been a lot of coming to Jesus. Who's won a championship? Larson. Who's the hottest driver in the Hendrick garage right now? Byron. None of this points to Chase Elliott. That's got to be his soul in half. He's NASCAR's most liked driver. And he's following as similar course as Dale Earnhardt, Dale Earnhardt Jr. I may be loud and obnoxious, but I'm telling you, Chase is more, this is more than a leg injury. This is a confidence factor.
Well, I think he would have had a good run at Michigan had, you know, his spin not happened, because it seemed like early on he really was, you know, trying to push the factor, trying to grab as many points as possible. I'm sure he knew he was not the fastest driver at Michigan, but he knew the situation he was in, which was basically, I have to win to get in, but at the same time, I have to try to gain as many points as possible, being that I've missed, you know, so many races. And it really showed, and now, I mean, the pressure is really getting on, not only in the fact of the sense of that he's not number one at Hendrick, because right now he's probably number three, being Larson and Byron are one and two. And we can make the argument of who's really number one and who's really number two, and that can really go either way between Byron or Larson right now. But with Elliott right now, it's seeming like he's number three, and he's got the pressure of that. He could be, as to Chris has mentioned, but now he's under the pressure of he may not be able to make the playoffs. And as much as we can sit here and say NASCAR is going to find a way to make it work, what if there's a way NASCAR can't? At that point, Chase Elliott's gonna live under the pressure of, oh, shiznit, you know, I'm not in the playoffs, what do I do?
Right.
That just builds more pressure into the following season.
Yeah, you know, I think that Dale Jr. had a cheated car in 2001 in July. I think that Dale knew that he had a cheated car, and that kind of gave him the confidence there at the end to be able to pass everybody for the win. He said it, you know, a few times thereafter. Dale Jarrett has made a couple of comments as well that, you know, that people just really wasn't racing Junior that hard for the win. And then you go to the 2011, I think it was at Daytona, when he was in the number three car in the Xfinity Series. You know as well as I do that car had everything in it that it needed to win, but it took the driver to put it there to get the win. And so it's going to take, I'm not saying, I don't really know if I think NASCAR is going to come in and try to make it a better path for Chase Elliott. But given certain cautions and whatnot, I do feel like they'll fall in favor of Chase any way possible, because he is the face of the racing series, though I think we have so many other characters now that we can involve as being the true face, Watermelon Man, my amigo,
You know, we're actually getting nicknames again in the sport, guys. I mean, that we're literally getting nicknames again. And so I'm not sure if Chase would be at the top of the board for those. As a matter of fact, it will be the greatest day in NASCAR history when Chase Elliott doesn't win the most popular driver award. And I really feel like if everybody decided just to vote for Kyle Busch, even though they don't like him, that would help kind of really just kick Chase Elliott out of his racing series. I think he'd go retire if he lost to Kyle Busch as the most popular driver. Honestly, this year, I think Kyle Busch has been more popular than Chase Elliott. So if Chase Elliott somehow wins the most popular driver award at the end of the year, I'm going to feel like it's rigged because, nobody's booing the bow. So if you're not booing the bow, then you must be his fan. And Kyle Busch has turned all these boos into cheers. He's got to be the most popular driver in racing right now. But back to the chase, I think that we've spent more time than we should even talking about this guy. As I said before, he may be the third best driver in his organization. Does it work good for NASCAR if Chase wins at either Indy or Watkins Glen? Absolutely. Does it tarnish the others and their chances for a championship? Absolutely. Kyle Busch is not happy that he won a championship in a year where he didn't race half the races because there's an asterisk beside it, right? Any racer, they don't want the asterisk, man. And we know Kyle Busch is – thank God he won a second championship, right? Because if he just had that one championship, I don't think that he would be fulfilled with the true meaning of winning a championship. This is NASCAR's altered way to a championship. Not a true championship. And if Chase Elliott somehow benefits from this rigged way, then I feel like he's going to be similar to Kyle Busch. It's not something that he's going to, look back on and cherish that moment. Hey, I made the chase after being out of the car for 7-8 weeks. And then plus this guy got suspended for a race for rough driving. And NASCAR approved a waiver. Like, who does that? Who gets suspended for behavioral issues and then still gets a waiver to go race for a championship? And there again, once again, the behavioral issue may have actually cost them a chance to make the playoffs in on points. I'm ready for somebody else to take the wings here. Taz, Miss Lee, he's chomping at the bit to get in.
I think we just move on from this topic.
Oh, yeah, beat it in the ground. Just beat it. Beat it. Silly season.
John Hunter Nemechek,
I guess, is going to the 42. Noah Gregson was fired this morning, and then he was unfired. What's going on here? Does anybody have a definite? What's going on here? Yeah. First of all, we didn't even get into the whole sensitivity crap. We didn't even get into the fact that this guy liked a meme from, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, during a time where everybody was kind of screwed up in the head anyway, and the whole world seemed to be coming to an end. Are we putting too much into this? Because, honestly, I wouldn't have suspended the driver. Maybe I'm insensitive. Maybe I'm a creep. I don't see no harm, no foul in any of this. I feel like this was just an easy way to get Noah out of the race car. Because basically they were Toyota said, we done fired this guy one time, we don't want him back. I would like to know your thoughts, of course, whether or not you believe this is an actual issue, whether or not you believe there should be sensitivity, a counseling involved in this. I really want you guys to get in depth. I'm going to start with you, Tad. Explain to me what you honestly feel about this whole Noah Gregson and Legacy Motor Club situation. And the fact that they were the ones that suspended him, and now NASCAR has gotten involved, and he will have to go to sensitivity training, along with the news that he was fired earlier today, and then that was retracted. Go ahead, Ted.
So, depending on – so we all knew Legacy is going to Toyota. So, at that point, you sat there and thought Gregson and Jones – next year, by the way,
those two were going to be, you know, safe, bound, and whatnot. And then you sit here, and then all of a sudden, I saw the post that Legacy Motor Club had suspended Noah Gregson for at least Michigan. And then we all, and of course, some people are like, what? What are we missing? Stuff like that. And it's going around that Noah Gregson liked some tweet or whatever that happened back a few years ago and whatnot. And, or not some tweet, some meme on Instagram it was. And it got around. Obviously, one reporter mentioned it to somebody, and then it spread, and obviously Legacy kinda took it into their hands and did what they need to do. Then it took into NASCAR. NASCAR took it into their own hands. I feel like it's kind of touchy because, like, I feel like him, in a sense, as a person, you know, it's, I guess what you could say as like a person, you know, it's him just trying to be him. If he found something, you know, that's funny, you know, he's going to like it. I mean, like we do, you know, we find something on Facebook or we find something on Twitter or TikTok, whatever. We find it funny, and what do? We like and share it, or we just like it, you know, whatever. And unfortunately, with how today's day and age, with how sensitive people can be with certain things, and especially when it comes to celebrities and pro athletes or whatever, we saw what happened with Larson and Gregson, unfortunately, has now fallen into suit with that. I feel like a small suspension, in a sense, would have been fair if you did. Obviously, there's going to be sensitivity training involved, not of that, but if depending on which, and also if you, depending on which reporter you ask, if you ask Jordan Bianchi of The Athletic, it was reported that Legacy and Noah Gregson have officially parted ways after this season, should Gregson's suspension lift before the season ends. In terms of, if you ask Jim Utter, I'm trying to remember where he's from, he puts out that Legacy and Gregson have not parted ways. Kind of like, is he really let go? Is he really not? I don't know. But of course, we all knew the speculation once we heard the news that Toyota basically didn't want Gregson because they want John Hunter Nemechek up there. We all knew someday, sometime, Gregson was going to get the door, or the boot, I should say, and insert John Hunter Nemechek. It was just a matter of time, you know. Obviously, nothing's been officially announced yet in terms of who's taking over the 42, and even if Gregson is staying in the 42, because there's not a lot of the same story in terms of that deal.
All right. I'm calling BS on this whole situation. And again, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I agree with the idea that Toyota didn't want Gregson, so they sent somebody hunting for something, anything, to pin him on. And I'm going to go there And I'm going to say this PC society that we live in today is over the top. When you cannot say what you believe without having to check yourself,
amen,
because of sponsors or worrying about losing your job, it doesn't matter who you are, what field you are in, you have a First Amendment right. And I know this is not a political show, but when our First Amendment rights are being trampled on in such overt ways, we have a problem as a society, as America. As far as the racing goes, I totally agree with the idea that Toyota didn't want Gregson, so they went and they found something.
Right.
Some way to get rid of them. Now,
right,
given the precedent of Kyle Larson's issue, NOAA will do quote-unquote sensitivity training, and he's going to come back just like Larson did. And that's
the
end of my way.
Can you not be on either side of the fence and just enjoy a good freaking meme? Like, memes are a part of our culture. I am not going to sit here and not give a kid an opportunity to go to college somewhere because he may have liked a political meme that doesn't go with my views. He is allowed to have his view. Now, if I seen what sponsor come out and said, hey, we don't want to sponsor this guy like we did with Kyle Larson, right? Kyle Larson lost his sponsor.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't think sponsors were jumping
on
this one.
No. No sponsor has come out and said anything. Now, watch them come out of the woodwork. But to this point, no sponsor has come out and said we're not going to continue to sponsor him.
Right.
Right.
This is a hit case. This was a TRD thing. If they were, I don't want to say something insensitive, but Toyota Racing, I just don't like. I drive a Toyota. I love my Toyota Camry. But it's still hard to this day to like Toyota Racing and NASCAR. And it's just deals like this, the dirty politics. You kind of just wonder, you know, being that John Hunter is the beneficiary to all of this, it's maybe, you know, this isn't, once again, Joe Gibbs, right? Joe Gibbs with his greedy, nasty, ugly little, you know, I mean, look, every time I see he gets us on the side of the Monster Energy car, it's like, he knows blasphemy. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about that. But he gets us as a Christian organization on a can of energy drink that promotes the beast, right? And we all know who the beast is, right? He's the devil, right? So it's just, you know, once again, I hate to bring it to this little level here, but it just seems fishy. It seems out of character. It seems like they would have known that this happened beforehand. And what everybody's confused of, it didn't happen yesterday. This was something that was found on his Twitter from 3 years ago that obviously when all of this was going on, nobody picked up on it then, right? I mean, wait a minute.
I told you they went searching for this.
Of course they did. It's the main reason why any athlete or anybody who's going into the political platform, the first thing they do is try to erase everything from the previous years on their Twitter and Facebook accounts. And you can't blame them. You really can't blame them. As we've seen people denied opportunity for colleges and denied or are fired from their jobs. Elon Musk actually come out within an hour and was like, if you've been fired for something that's happened on because of a meme or something on this platform, that Twitter X will be glad to help cover the legal costs and stuff through that. So you just kind of have to wonder if maybe some legal teams didn't come together real quick and call Legacy and be like, hey, we can't fire him. And it's because if we do, it'll open up these cans of worms. But anyway, we put too much time and emphasis into that. Silly season is still relevant. We don't know where Denny Hamlin is going. We don't know the future. We do know Ryan Preece is staying in the 41. We still don't know the future of Eric Amarola. We don't know the future of Michael McDowell. We don't know the future of Zane Smith. There's still variables to be played here. Where does Noah Gregson go from here? Because the one thing that I take from his interview last year after the Dale Jr. fiasco, after Dale Jr. called him out and they suspended him from his ride, the emotional Noah Gregson was like, I'm so ready to go cup racing, but I'm afraid of leaving the success that I'm having now for mediocre. And I feel like from the day he signed that contract, we were all like, whoa, dude, you shouldn't have done that. And now here we are 9-10 months later, really realizing that this dude should not have gone to that ride. Like, if he would have held out a couple more weeks, I think he would have been probably set for a full-time ride at Colleague Racing. I think you got to jump the ship on this one. And, of course, a whole lot of things have happened since he signed on with the Legacy Motorsports. At that point in time, it was still Petty and GMS Racing. So a lot has changed in the organization since Noah Gregson signed that deal. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, that's exactly where I was going, because you also forgot to mention the thought of possibly SVG trying to get into the Cup Series, right? And
right.
We also asked the question of, if he comes over, how's he going to do on ovals? Well, we're about ready to find out, because when the Truck Series hits IRP, either this weekend or next weekend, I don't remember exactly, he'll be running for Nice Motorsports in the truck race. So we'll see how he'll be able to do. But, again, this comes down to, I think, Colleague right now, because of Justin Haley out, they have an open car. And obviously we can sit here and say, well, Gregson, because he's worked with Colleague before in the past and stuff like that, so it would make perfect sense, and Chevy would be able to keep Gregson. Now, the only other question raises is that if and only if SVG does somehow get signed to a Cup Series ride, where is he going to go? Right now with Supercars, he's with Chevy. So you have to think Chevy teams, right? And, of course, there's the Spire option. And if Ty Dillon says, if given the boot, says see you later, there's SVG. But at the same time, you have to sit here and think, well, can Colleague take the opportunity and nab him? And that would screw Gregson in that sense. Now, in our chat before, before the show started, Craig chimed in and said something of, could this be the motivation for Dale Jr. to try to get a charter and put Junior Motorsports on the map and be a satellite team off of Hendrick? And which you could sit here and think, yeah, that could be the motivator, but at the same time, you have to sit here and think, is there really going to be a charter available? Because right now all charters are not, there's not even a charter up for sale, and NASCAR hasn't even taken in any action of taking away a charter from, say, Rick Ware with one of their cars, or BJ McLeod, for instance. So
right.
You have this, So you have all these question marks in the air of not only what is what driver going where, but you have so many puzzle pieces of if they're going to be a team that will field an open car full time, just to field Gregson or field SVG, for example, you know, there's so many variables that we don't even know right now. And I feel like the biggest wild card of that right now is this SVG deal because of Chevy, Gregson with Chevy. Obviously, when it comes to Ford, you know, there's that fiasco. But
right, but
again,
but don't forget that Dale Jr. has already expressed his desire to field the Cup team. You know, again, the charter thing comes into play, but there's that too.
And the only downfall, and we've seen this with Gaunt Brothers and Daniel Suarez the 1 year, the only downfall of trying to field a open car full time is if you run into a situation, we've seen this numerous times in the Xfinity series in the last few years, is that if you, like, we'll use Daytona, for example. If you fail to qualify for the 500 and there's more than 40 cars, which in the last number of years there has been, if you fail to qualify, you're screwed, you kind of screwed yourself in the points, in a sense, right? Now, if you say, I mean, look at, like I said, Daniel Suarez with Gaunt Brothers. He missed out on the Daytona 500 fielding an open car. In the Xfinity series, there's been times where a driver misses out of the race that weekend because qualifying was rained out and you have to fall back on the previous race, and that can screw a driver too. So that's the only downfall of having trying to field an open car on a full-time basis. And if you get races where you have more than 40 cars.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer to that one.
Well, I don't think I do either. I think that Noah Gregson's best bet is probably back to Junior Motorsports, and there's probably a couple of openings there for him. If not, then maybe over at College Racing. Of course, they're still questioning about who's going to be in the 31. I think that that's probably, like, the biggest open ride right now that we know is available. The problem is what names are available, and obviously Noah Gregson's name should be, I believe, at the top of that list. Look, I've never been a Noah Gregson fan, but I think that his last year at Junior Motorsports, he proved to me that he had the talent of what it took. I love his personality, and I think that in the beginning, maybe he was a rich, spoiled kid who got opportunities that other people didn't get. But since then, he's had to go through life, and it's been a roller coaster for him. His father's gotten locked up for manslaughter. He was having the best year of his career and took out some aggression and wound up getting suspended, getting talked down by the guy that he really looked up to. I don't know if it was Noah's relationship with Dale or Noah's relationship with Kelly that was the strongest. I feel like Kelly was the real connection to Noah Gregson at the time. And I would definitely see that relationship able to be repaired and obviously a homecoming for Noah Gregson to come back to the organization here. We're running short on time. Of course, we had an SRX series segment that we needed to get into, but dealing with the crunch of time and having the interview on, I think that we're just going to have to skip that. Taz, I think that we should probably use these last few minutes to get
some hot picks out for this upcoming Indy event. Do you want to take over from here, sir?
Hey, yes.
Look, if you want to say something about the SRX, I know that you probably have something that you wanted to go through with that. Let's go ahead and get that in real quick, and then if you can kind of hurry and give us the top three contenders, pretenders, and whatnot, we'll kind of close out the show with that.
Yeah, quick SRX update. Obviously, Paul Tracy is out for the rest of the season, hence why Johnny Benson Jr. was racing at Berlin this past week. This week and next week, SRX hit the two and only dirt tracks of the season to wrap things up. This week at Eldora, Chase Briscoe will be piloting the empty ride. And then next week, it's been announced yesterday that Jonathan Davenport will be piloting an SRX machine at Lucas Oil Speedway in Missouri to finish this season. Right now, Ryan Newman continues to lead the SRX point standings. Kyle Busch goes back-to-back. I believe he's the first driver since Tony Stewart of season one to win back-to-back races. And he, along with Chase Elliott, are the only two drivers that I can remember to date, are the only two drivers that have gone 2-4-2 in their SRX series debut, or however you want to word it. And Kyle Busch has mentioned he wants to run more SRX races in the future if the schedule works. His schedule works out. Obviously, he's got trucks, Cup, plus his racing with Brexton, you know. But anyways, hot picks for Indianapolis, the road course, instead of the oval like it should be. But, hey, I'm just going along for the ride. Anyways, my favorites this week, I am looking at A.J. Allmendinger, Tyler Reddick, and Kyle Larson. As for contenders, I am looking at Austin Cindric, Chris Buescher, and Chase Elliott. And for underdogs, I am throwing in Harrison Burton, Eric Jones, and Ty Gibbs. If we can throw in two or three names for each category while we have a few minutes to wrap up our list, that would be great. And the panel is now open.
Right?
Can you post those picks real quick, or did you send those into the chat? That's too good. Yeah, just throw those in there so I got something to look at. So I'm very surprised at the Harrison Burton. He finally made the list. I don't know what substance he has on the reason why he would be an underdog other than maybe Penske.
Hold on, Chris. Last year he finished third in this race.
Very interesting, Taz. Taz has done his homework. All right, so third. That's probably his best career finish. All right, so did we hear Austin Cindric?
As a contender, yes.
Okay. So I'm going back to my, did you get that post to AJ? Where's AJ?
There it is.
Okay, there it is. Okay. Not seeing AJ on the Dinger. I don't know why. Well, how can we not have Dinger on here?
I mean, we've only raced the Indy road course twice.
Oh, Dinger's in the favorite. Okay, Dinger is a favorite.
Yeah,
okay, all right.
Dinger and Reddick are the only two winners of this race.
Right. So Dinger's
possible,
a fast winner.
What about McDowell?
You see, I was going to throw his name in there, but I didn't know where to throw, and so I left his name off the list for good reason, because I knew his name was going to come up, and I wanted to see how you guys felt about it, because I could throw him an underdog, but at the same time, he's got this niche for road courses, so So it was like, do I throw him in underdog or do I throw him in contender list?
Definitely underdog, for sure. That's where Michael McDowell belongs most of the time. It's hard to give him much more credit when you've got other guys that are in, of course, superior equipment. Ty Gibbs comes to name, Christopher Bell, of course. So definitely we could squeeze McDowell over there. And also I think by surprise, Todd Gillian is a pretty good road racer as well. But I said Ty Gibbs, and I think Ty Gibbs is one of those guys that we've been waiting on to see kind of, you know, we've been quiet about him. And his name's kind of gotten mentioned the last couple of weeks. Could we put much substance into the fact that maybe Ty Gibbs actually comes out of this race really competitive?
Oh, for sure. I mean, last year he finished 17th. So,
yeah, I would almost pencil him in as a contender.
Doesn't he have a road course win in Xfinity?
Yeah,
well, I don't know about
that. He does really well.
But,
yeah, he's won several Xfinity road course races.
I do want to throw in quick. If we're gonna throw in McDowell somewhere, because I can't leave him off this list. You mentioned Christopher Bell. We could, but given that he is in two races, he has a 24 average finish. It doesn't look good. He has not scored a top 10 in either of these two races. There are some names that are up there that we're leaving off here. Chris mentioned Todd Gillen. I can easily throw him in for a underdog achievement. We could throw Bubba Wallace into the hat. He's got around a top 10 average finish at this track. Justin Haley, who did exceptionally well in the Chicago Street Course. I believe Denny Hamlin is an easy favorite to throw in. Maybe Martin Truex Jr. as well, being that I remember Hamlin was basically. Truex is hot, feeling hot right now, and Hamlin, on the other hand, I believe at one point could have won the Indy road course race the first year it was held. But ended up going to AJ Allmendinger. I'm trying to think. I think there was an incident that Hamlin was involved in that costed him.
So one more that I think we're missing is Kevin Harvick in this. And I feel like desperation is there. Kevin Harvick.
I could see him as a contender. Or not a contender, an underdog.
That's where I'm feeling on this one.
Yeah, he's not known for road courses.
As of right now, I'm looking at the list, and we threw in Hamlin, we threw in Truex for the favorites, we threw in Todd Gillen, we've now thrown in Kevin Harvick on the underdogs. We've thrown in Michael McDowell as a contender that could either way go arguable underdog or contender either way. We could throw in one more contender if we wanted to, and I've mentioned his name already. There's the Bubba Wallace factor. There's also a Joey Logano factor, although his average finish doesn't entirely add up to make that happen. And I've thrown in Justin Haley, who had a fairly well decent run at Chicago Street Course, although he probably would fit more into the underdog role. So are we feeling the Bubba Wallace or the Joey Logano deal in terms of that final contender role?
And
that would
sound
like a Joey Logano.
Damn, that's a tough one because Logano's not necessarily known for road courses, and Bubba's only won on road courses because of sheer luck. So I don't know. I throw Logano in there because he can always surprise us.
Yeah, I think it's Logano.
Yep. All right, fair enough. So that basically closes our list. I'll go over it again, and, of course, it'll be posted in the morning. A.J. Allmendinger, Tyler Reddick, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., we have listed as our favorites for the Indy Road Course this weekend. Contenders, we have Austin Cindric, Chris Buescher, Chase Elliott, Michael McDowell, and Joey Logano. For underdogs, Harrison Burton, Eric Jones, Ty Gibbs, Todd Gilliland, and Kevin Harvick. Of course, there have been a few names we have thrown out there that are not on this list, but hey, it happens every week because there's plenty of variables to figure things out.
Very much so. And we have to race the race to see who wins. All right. Thank y'all for being a part of the show here tonight. Of course, I'm going to let Taz Taylor sign us off here, but we do want to remind you guys that we are on all the cool podcasts, and if you come across this show, share the link. We're always looking for new followers. But Taz Taylor, go ahead and close us out here, my friend.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening along to Race Chat Live here on Tuesday night. We want to thank Austin Terrio for coming on to the show earlier tonight for a wonderful interview to talk about his event and what's going on over in Maine. Be sure to listen to us on any forms of podcast if you ever miss our live shows, such as Blog Talk Radio, iHeart Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, RSS Feed, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, GeoSaving Podcast, Addict, Deezer, Podchaser, and on YouTube. Thank you to our sponsors that make the 110 Nation roll. Bears Bullish Market Talk Group, Carolina Sports Plus, More to Music, Karaoke and Entertainment, Yellow Caution Flag Productions, and TNT Design. We want to thank everyone for listening on to the show. We'll be back at same bat time, same bat place next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. This has been the Caution Flag Racing Radio. Chris Creighton, the Mama Bear of the 110 Nation, Miss Lee Reed. I'm the Tasmanian Devil of Flaggers, Taz Taylor, saying good night. We'll see y'all next week.
Goodbye.
Good night, everyone.